We'll call the meeting to order. The Environment Natural Resources Policy Committee. Representative Fabian makes a motion for the minutes of March 19th. Representative Fabian, you are good with the wagging the pencil. Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. First bill we have before us. The chair will move House File 2892 to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Hartman, you want to move the A1 amendment?
I do, Mr.
The chair.
Chair
moves the... We have a quorum. We have the chair moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author wants it. All in favor, say aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Hortman, to the bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2892 is a bill to take steps to reduce the hazard of used household sharps in our solid waste stream. A significant majority of used sharps currently are just thrown in household trash, and that creates a hazard for the people who manage and process solid waste. Sorting solid waste is a very labor-intensive process, and especially the sorting of recyclables involves people with hands on a conveyor belt sorting materials, and workers are subject to being stuck by needles if they should appear in the waste stream. This bill provides a mechanism for consumers to safely dispose of their sharps, and the bill requires a container to be sold with large quantities of sharps. And it prohibits the disposal of discarded sharps in the waste stream with recyclable materials where people are most at risk of being stuck. I have with me today Tom Erickson from Ultimed, a sharps manufacturer, and Doug Carnival, representing waste haulers, to testify in support of the bill.
Do anyone have any questions? Members have questions of Representative Hartman on the bill as amended. Being none, Mr. Erickson, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Erickson. I am the CEO of Ultimed, a manufacturer of sharps for home use with its corporate headquarters in St. Paul and additional manufacturing facilities in South Dakota and South Korea. Ultimed supports this proposal, which would require manufacturers such as us to provide a free sharps disposal container for retailers to provide consumers when they purchase sharps in packages of 90 or more. Ultimed has been working with organizations responsible for the managing of solid waste, which includes our counties and organizations who process solid waste. These organizations share a concern over the number of sharps which continue to find their way into the household waste stream. Having manufacturers provide the safe sharps containers is an important first step in the efforts to reduce the number of sharps in the waste stream and reduce the very serious risk to workers. Every time a worker is stuck by a sharp of unknown origin, it results in a great deal of anxiety and expense. This bill does not represent an overall solution to the problem, but does promise to reduce the risk in a significant way. Ultimed and the organizations whom we have been working on this issue ask for your support today. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have about Representative Hortman's bill.
Questions for Mr. Erickson. Representative Eagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Erickson, what are people doing today? Because there are containers and things that are available for sale right now at your typical drugstores or whatever, aren't there?
Mr. Erickson.
Yes, there are. And unfortunately... it's been a situation where people tend not to buy these. They retail for about $4.50 a piece, approximately. They are available in pharmacies, but from surveys that have been taken, telephone surveys that we've been aware of over the year, perhaps 95% or more of these sharps are disposed of improperly and do not go in a sharps container. One of the biggest impediments of this is people just don't have the sharps container to put it in. They might try to put it in a Hilux bottle or something, but they tend to break open. Sharps containers are regulated by the federal government for strength, and we believe it's an important first step. Yes. Did I answer your question?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Follow up. Now, okay, so these sharps containers, if we pass this law, how many manufacturers of sharps containers are there, and are they going to be able to keep up with the demand?
Jackson.
I would say there shouldn't be any problem at all. The largest the largest company, the most significant company in our space is a company called Becton Dickinson, or it goes by the abbreviation BD, and they are also, in addition to being the largest manufacturer of syringes and needles in the world, they're also the largest manufacturer today of home-use sharps containers. And so they have the molds and the capabilities, and certainly in the injection molding capability to do it. We already supply sharps containers with many of our products, not all of them, but many of them. We encourage it, our customers, to do it. And I think it's fairly easy because most people, all people that use syringes are injected molded plastics, and it's the same type of machines and molds and that type of thing. It's the same technology used to make sharps containers is to make the injected mold plastic parts for syringes and pen needles.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Erickson, you said that people that put them in the Hylex container, you said they tend to break open. Can you give me an example of that happening?
Mr. Erickson.
I can give no personal example that I've seen. I've heard of many, many times, perhaps hundreds of times, being in the industry where containers, well, number one, first of all, many people don't throw them in containers at all, unfortunately. And sometimes there are containers that are not built to the specifications of a sharps container and tend to break open more easily.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me because I'm not too familiar with this, when the containers that people have now, when they're full and they're taken to recycling centers, does the container itself get recycled and reused?
Jackson.
If it goes into the medical waste stream, which is where we all would like it to go to eventually, and the medical waste stream is for hospital pickups, veterinary pickups, that type of thing. And those containers are picked up by companies such as Stericycle or people that are in that business of medical waste. And they typically have autoclave, and they autoclave these things under heat and pressure. And then that inerts it, takes all the germs out of it, and then they dispose of it in their ways that each one of them has individual of them. But they are safe at that time to go into a landfill after they've been autoclaved.
Representative Green.
So why, if they're safe after that time, why not reuse them instead of send them to the landfill?
Mr. Erickson.
That's a question I can't answer. I'm not in that business of recycling those things.
Mr. Erickson, do you mean that the sharps are safe or the... What is safe, specifically?
By safe, I mean they're germ-free. If there's hepatitis or HIV or some type of a contagious disease, all of these things are killed in the autoclave process.
So you're talking about inside the sharps box as well as the needles?
Yes, all the germs that may be there that are
contagious. Representative Green.
So that would maybe help clarify my question there. I'm not talking about the sharps themselves. I'm talking about the containers that they're in. Are they recycled and reused?
Mr. Erickson.
That's a question you have to address Stericycle, and I don't know what they do with it.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, isn't this going to add to landfill problems, putting more plastic into landfills?
Mr. Erickson. Representative Portman.
I can't answer that because I don't know where they go after Stericycle gets done with them.
Representative Portman.
Mr. Chair, I think probably the waste hauler community might be a better entity to address these questions because... I think what the questions are getting at is what happens to these containers once they're in the garbage. The objective is to get the sharps.
Well,
in
we
a
have
safe
Mr. Carnival coming up in a moment.
To get them in a safe container so that they're not stabbing workers. I think this is really a separate issue in terms of turning the end-use product into a new product, and I don't think that the bill really contemplates what happens after the safe disposal.
Any further questions by the members? Representative Green.
Yes, Mr. Chair. You had stated that 95% of these things aren't disposed of properly. What percentage of the sharps are used and go through medical places such as nursing homes, assisted livings, hospitals?
That doesn't include those. That 95% statistic, which was done by telephone surveys a while ago, and they... that's just for home use sharps. The sharps that go into hospitals, the sharps that go into clinics, veterinaries, they are all by law, have to go on the sharps container on the wall, and that's picked up by a company like Stericycle. The ones that we're concerned about here are the ones running around loose that go into the home environment. In the United States, it's estimated there's about 3 billion syringes a year that are going into the home environment. That hospitals probably even a bigger billion number, but just into that environment, and a large percentage of these are running around loose and sticking people.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, for people that have been around here longer than I have, does the legislature force other manufacturers to give things away at no cost?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I can remember another bill that we had that involved fluorescent light bulbs, where there was contemplated a container that a person would get when they purchased the lights to send them back in so they were properly recycled. But that bill didn't progress. As my freshman term, I was a minority member. Sometimes when you're a minority member, your bills don't move that fast. But I can't recall another bill that would have had a measure like that.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To this point, reading the bill and thought about this, and I'm not going to commit to how to proceed, but it seems to me that when you have a public health issue like this, that there has to be a full circle. And we got to get these needles out of where they're going to be sticking people that shouldn't be stuck. So if it's not that we're going to have a container that has to be provided free, then that or built into the cost, that the doctor writing a script for the doggone thing says, you get a script, you get a container, it's going to cut that needle off, you know, something, but not just leave it up to the whims. That's where I'm at when I thought about this. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ignore no question there, Representative Urso, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. I was wondering, what is the typical capacity of the sharps containers that you can purchase at the pharmacy?
So Smalley can't see us.
Please, Mike.
This right here is an example is a BD Sharps container. As I mentioned, they're the largest manufacturer in the world of syringes and pen needles. They're also the largest manufacturer in the world of sharps containers. And this is one that they have that's specially made that are sold typically in pharmacies. And they hold typically about 100 syringes, which would be a box of syringes. Depends a little bit one way or the other on the type of syringe.
Representative Russo.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's designed to hold the whole syringe or just the needles?
This is the whole syringe.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Well, there's the flex pen, Representative Russo, that I use, and then there's the needles that I used to use. And so I'm, you know, the needles just to fit on the flex pen. They're little guys. They had to hold, a whole box of BD syringes. 500,
yes.
I think, come in a box.
Yes.
But a syringe would take a lot more room in a syringe. Mm-hmm. Plus, you'd have to get them in there like logs on a pulp truck if you wanted to get the maximum number in there.
Oh, no. Yes, I was just trying to thank you, Mr. I was trying to get an idea for the relative size compared to what they're talking about.
Further questions by the member? There's being none. Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Mr. Carnival.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Carnival, representing the National Waste and Recycling Association, formerly known as the National Solid Waste Management Association. I have with me two folks who are in the actual recycling business, and I want them to speak. But this bill came along, and we really don't have any opinion as to the base of the bill. It's the amendment that's on the bill that we want to speak to, which is an effort that we think is worthy of your consideration, which is to remove sharps from recycling. And they'll explain to you the problems that we've seen in this industry, people in their companies being stuck frequently by these products. So getting them out of the recycling stream is our objective, and we really have no opinion as to the other issues.
Introduce yourself. Go ahead with your testimony.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Julie Ketchum, and I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Waste Management. Waste Management is the largest recycler in the state of Minnesota, and we serve the region, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin at our recycling facility in Minneapolis. We process about 250,000 tons of recyclable material a year. It's collected at the curb. And I'll go through a little bit of the process at the recycling facility to give you an idea of the worker safety issue that Doug mentioned and that we need to address, that we really feel strongly about. When recyclables are delivered to the MRF recycling facility, they're tipped on a tipping floor, and they go through three different lines where the recyclable material is hand-sorted, hand-picked through. There are about 20 people in each shift. We run three shifts a day. That's 60 people that have very heavy rubberized gloves that are designed to protect them from needle sticks. Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. And when they don't, it's a major worker safety issue in that these people then need to be vaccinated. They need to have their blood monitored. And for potential exposure to bloodborne pathogens like hepatitis B, C, and HIV, and other bloodborne pathogens. It's a huge issue for us. It is expensive. It is very concerning to our workers when these things come on the line. I've been there when we've had to shut down the facility, and because needles, when they get on a conveyor belt, they shoot out at the workers, and it's very hazardous working environment. If you ask any recycler in the state, how often do you see sharps, whether it's Bill here or Mark Stoltman from Randy Sanitation or whomever, they're going to say every day or all the time. And we do. We see sharps all the time coming in the recycling. And I think it's very easy for homeowners to be confused with the containers. They put them in laundry detergent bottles, and sometimes the kids take out the recycling, and they confuse that Sharps container that they're using for their home use with a recyclable laundry detergent bottle. So it ends up inadvertently in the recycling. The statistics are about one in every 12 households is a needle user for a certain reason, diabetic, cancer, whatever, and they're doing it either self-injecting or they are doing in-home services where, it might be hospice or other in-home medical services that are provided. Last summer, our sharps issue, I've been working with Waste Management for 13 years and never had I been called on to deal with the issue from just a public health standpoint and education standpoint. It got out of control over at our facility. And so I worked with some of the Twin Cities, the cities in the Twin Cities area, the city health departments and the recycling coordinators to get the word out, get some education about how sharps should be managed. Keep them out of the recycling. It's the main point here, and help us protect our workers. I'm going to pass around some of the pictures that were taken from last summer, just of materials that showed up. And you can see they're really small. These sharps are small. They're about an inch by an inch and a half, some of them, and in various different phases. So you can take a look. And with that, I'll just urge you to, again, from our perspective, this is really we're looking at it from a worker safety standpoint and just banning sharps from the recycling stream.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Keegan. I'm with Demcon Companies. I'm also the chair of NWRA for our chapter, which Doug represents. Demcon Companies is a third-generation family-owned company. We've been around since the 50s in the recycling business. We recently opened the newest material recycling facility for single-stream curbside recyclables like we're talking about here that these sharps get mixed into. So we're the newest facility opened in Minnesota. So some of the history that Julie has with dealing with these I certainly don't have, but I can tell you what I do have in the last, you know, 4 months of dealing with this, and it's been a real surprise to us. It's very prevalent at the facility. We see sharps in the recycling on a daily basis. In preparation for this, I just posed the question yesterday to our facility, what sharps are they seeing? And they brought them down, and I took some pictures, and I'll pass those around at the end. Okay, you have the pictures passing around, I'm sorry. Took some pictures of what we're seeing, and one of these you'll see is a large Coke bottle, I think, and they're putting the sharps in the bottle. I think when they don't have a container, sharps container, the education campaign has been to put them in one of these. You know, and if that then gets placed in their garbage, I think that's a better solution for now than the recycling. Where this can't go is in the recycling, because what happens is when this goes in the recycling, it comes to a facility like ours, that container gets busted open with our heavy equipment and the processing machines, and you do have needles flying off of the equipment. You also have needles you know, poking the hands. So we've got puncture-resistant gloves on all of our workers. We've got policies where we stop the line. A supervisor comes up and takes a picture of it. But it's a definite health and safety concern for us. Changes that we have seen recently, I guess, in our industry, in our 4 months, is we continue to see them on a daily basis, but we also send some of our products to secondary processors. One of those is glass. Glass goes from our facility to a secondary processor that has equipment and people picking through it. And I spoke with them to ask how many sharps they're seeing in there, and in the glass, in 12 to 18 months ago, they were seeing 2 gallons of sharps a month. So 2 1-gallon containers full of sharps per month 12 months ago. Currently, they're seeing 15 to 20 gallons per month. So it's been a huge increase in the amount of sharps that they're seeing in the stream at the secondary processors. That material then comes, after they process, back to us as a disposal facility. We're also a disposal facility, and we're now seeing them in the landfill there. So I think the appropriate thing is to put those into the garbage for the homeowners and not the recycling. I think it's important to get that message out there by banning the sharps from the recycling, because it's a health and safety issue for us and our workers. So.
For the test plant, there being none, I got to make a clarification. Mr. Carnival, you said you were not here to support the bill to talk to the amendment, so are you in accordance with the bill as amended?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you for that. And Mr. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think this is a really serious issue, and I've got an oral amendment that I'd like to offer. If I don't know where we're at in the process.
But why don't we just take the amendment as soon as we have the last scheduled test?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, your amendment is noted.
Thank you.
All right, the next is from Adamed. Hartgen, Ms. Hartgen. Yep, is that right, Hartgen?
Hartgen, correct.
Yep, okay, yep. Welcome.
Thank you.
Just state your name for the record and go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carrie Hartgen. I am here to testify today on behalf of AdvaMed, which is the Advanced Medical Technology Association. AdvaMed is the primary national trade association representing manufacturers of medical devices, diagnostics, and health information systems. As you may know, Minnesota is home to many of our member companies, and some say the birthplace of the medical technology industry. My industry is responsible for 83,000 direct and indirect jobs and for an annual contribution of approximately $14.3 billion to the state economy. AdvaMed has concerns about House File 2892 and would suggest to the committee that this legislation is currently written as an incomplete solution looking for an undocumented problem. Notwithstanding the fact that there could be significant costs to the state to implement this bill, we're also concerned that the one-size-fits-all approach to directing certain types of syringe waste to disposal containers doesn't take into account the range of innovative sharps disposal options and technologies already in the market and being used by patients. In essence, this bill pigeonholes syringe users to one method of containment, and even more disconcerting, does nothing more than create a competitive advantage for one company that makes these containers. The Minnesota legislature last addressed sharps disposal in 2010 with Senate File 1323, which provided for safe sharps management. The act requires sharps manufacturers to post to their websites a plan that describes how they support the safe and proper disposal of sharps. These plans are also required to take steps. To state steps taken to educate consumers and other supportive sharps education efforts undertaken by the manufacturer. Mr. Chairman, we are curious as to why the change in direction when we barely had an opportunity to assess the success of these sharps plans and manufacturers' education efforts. Some of our other concerns: the bill would only encourage the containment of one type of syringe, however, is silent on the disposal of the container. Ideally, effective solutions should cover both containment and disposal. For instance, what do you do with a container when it is full? Do you mail it back? Do you throw it in the trash? This bill does not address the disposal of the container. There's no doubt that syringes find their way into the waste stream. However, it's been a real problem documenting the aggregate program and the extent of it. We think before the legislature acts on this, it would be an important step to gather effective data to determine where the problems from needle stick injuries exist and might arise, and after that, craft a broader solution to get at any problem. For instance, your own state PCA, this is a flyer that's put out by your PCA, specifically directs consumers to, after they destroy a syringe using a needle cutter, the information here says the plastic can be safely disposed of in the garbage and not a recycling container. And so your own PCA is directing consumers to do something different than the goal of getting those syringes out of the waste stream. The bill also has the potential to disrupt existing payment and reimbursement mechanisms by unintentionally leading private insurers that might now cover sharps disposal to drop such coverage. Further, it fails to consider the impact on Medicare and Medicaid, which pay a sizable amount for injected compounds but do not currently cover sharps disposal kits and programs. It's also worth noting that Medicare and Medicaid policy restricts the items companies can provide without cost to patients or any other entity. As such, the cost for disposal containers would have to be borne by the state. By law, we cannot provide containers to the consumer in the Medicaid or Medicare space. Otherwise, it would be considered an inducement. Lastly, we don't believe the bulk of sharps in the waste stream is necessarily coming from people with diabetes, which this bill is targeted towards. Perhaps efforts are better focused on finding solutions for people who use illicit drugs and are likely disposing of syringes improperly. On the surface, this bill seems to be an unfair burden on device manufacturers who serve people with chronic disease to carry forward. In closing, we ask that you and other legislators hold off on further action related to the bill during this legislative session so that we can have an opportunity to have a more robust, broad-based discussion about sharps and the environment and craft a solution that accounts for all of these issues. Again, AdvaMed believes that legislation passed in 2010 is working effectively and allows for companies to continue to innovate and patients the opportunity to choose options that best suit their needs. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Isaac.
I have a couple of questions, and I'm not sure if it's to the testifier or the author, and I wanted to be clear because I came in a little later. We had an amendment to the bill.
Well, we have a proposed amendment. The bill has already been amended by the author. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the witness, I'm sorry I missed your name.
Carrie Hartkin.
Thank you for testifying. You kept referring to us as your own state, so I take it that you're not a Minnesotan. Can you tell us where you're from?
Sure. I'm from Washington, D.C. I represent the medical device industry, and many of our member companies are headquartered and based and have facilities here in the state. But I am a representative of their National Trade Association and am based out of Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you would not have the same concern about the workers. You didn't talk to us about the workers in our recycling facilities, and now I think I understand why, so thanks.
Okay, Representative Hortman, Representative Isaacson has a question for you. Maybe we have more questions for the testifier. Representative Hortman.
Thank you. Representative Portman, I'm inclined to support, because I think there needs to be some measure of some disposal process, but it seems to me, and again, as I like to play my freshman card, and I know Fabian loves it when I do that, Representative Fabian does, but I'm kind of surprised that we don't have something in place already that describes or relates to the mandatory disposal of these needles in the first place. And so I'm just trying to understand, is there a context to this? And then also, what about some of the concerns related to how we're disposing them and what the requirements are with that? Can you just speak to that? And if you did already, I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Isaacson, I didn't speak to that. This is in the context of our former colleague, Representative Paul Gardner, worked for many years on dealing with the issue of pharmaceutical waste and sharps. And I know, you know, he ran into some buzzsaws with the pharmaceutical industry with some of his proposals. And this is just kind of, you know, it's not an area I worked in because we served together, and that was sort of his bailiwick. But my understanding is this is along the lines of his efforts, but is scaled back. I think his were more, his proposals that weren't successful in prior years involved take-back programs, where the manufacturers would be required to collect and take back the materials that they sold into the stream.
Mm-hmm. Representative Isaacson.
And so currently, right now, if we were not to require the collection of the, or at least the reciprocal, the bins to collect them, what is the options that the people have?
Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Isaacson, I think under current law, you know, if the bill as amended did not become law, there's nothing in place to prevent somebody from putting them in either their garbage or their recycling just open.
And is there more than one company that offers, excuse me, Mr. Chair? Is there more than one company right now that offers automatically the receptacle bins to go with it?
Department.
Mr. Chair, Representative Isaacson, in terms of being packaged together, I think one entity sells them together, mm-hmm. and I think the other entity that's concerned about this issue sells the container separately.
Further questions of the testifier? Being done, thank you so much for coming. Persons in the audience to testify for, well, we're going to take the amendment now. We'll take the McNamara amendment. Is this an oral amendment?
It is, Mr. Chair. It's actually two parts to it. I believe on line 1.2 of the A1, it references line 5. I believe, Representative Hortman, that was maybe supposed to be line 6.
If Mr. Eliff says so, then yes.
Yes. Well, I cheated. I went and talked to him first. And Mr. Chair and members, I believe my oral amendment would change on line 1.1, line 5 to line 6. And then, Mr. Eloff, 1.2 of the amendment. Did I say 1.5? I do that. I cross numbers. Thank you. Mr. Eloff, did you get the rest of my amendment? I should have you read it.
Mr. Eloff.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, on line 1.2 of the amendment, delete 5 and insert 6.
Mr. Chair, I would, just since that's sort of a non-controversial technical thing. Maybe we should just vote on that, put that on, and then deal with the second piece separately.
Okay, let's do the technical item. Will you repeat it, Mr. Elop, so everyone knows exactly what we're voting on?
Yes, Mr. Chair. On line 1.2 of the amendment, delete 5 and insert 6.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move another oral amendment, and I'd like Mr. Elop to explain it.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara's amendment has two parts. On line 1.7 and on line 1.9, delete the words "at no cost" on both lines.
Mr. Chair, if I could speak to the amendment.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think what we've got here is we've got basically two different firms that work in this area. One currently supplies the container that you put the sharps back in, and it is a container that works for the industry and for recycling. The other major manufacturer supplier does it differently. They do the little thing you were talking about that pinches off the needle, so it eliminates the needle. I tried to find out from Mr. Elop, and I think the leftover part without the needle might still be considered a sharp, but that's up in the air. But I think we could clarify that before the bill got to the floor to find out for sure if that's not sharp. Then the clipping off the needle is... And the author is nodding, so it's your understanding that if they clip the needle off, it's okay to go into the waste stream then?
Well, we have, Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, we do have the Pollution Control Agency here. I don't know if the person who knows the answer to that question would be in the room. I suspect that once you clip the needle off, it is no longer a sharp and could go in the waste in your house, in your not in recycling, but in your regular garbage.
Well... And, Mr. Chair, I was just bringing that up because that would allow more flexibility, again, for the different manufacturers. And then basically what the amendment does is it's not preferential to one manufacturer over another. And I believe the original bill and even the amendment, the way it's drafted, may be problematic for Medicare. If I'm not mistaken, Medicare requires that they not pay for the container and the return of it, that's problematic for reimbursement for Medicare. So it might, the amendment might help in that regard too. And so I guess that's all I have to say.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any objection to the amendment.
All in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. Anyone in the audience like to testify for or against the bill as amended? Anyone? Thought we had someone coming down. All right, Representative Fabian, do you have a question? I see your pencil wiggling.
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
As is often the case when these issues come before me, I've been on the phone. I talked to my landfill operator and at the Marquette landfill, and I also called one of my local pharmacists, Matson's Pharmacy in Roseville, if you're ever up there.
You know, Representative Fabian, I think we ought to outlaw cell phones in this committee because you do that all the time. Email home to your football coach and hockey coach. And Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do it with good intentions, too. Thanks. You know, I think everybody appreciates the good intentions behind the bill, but I think that there's some unanswered questions here, Representative Hortman, that maybe... I don't remember who was talking about it on the other side. I think Representative Isaacson said maybe we need to slow this down a little bit. We need to involve some more people in some of these discussions. And to Representative McNamara's amendment, and then we also heard about the needle cutters. Don't quite understand all this stuff necessarily, but if we're going to provide a package, you know, could we provide the needle cutter in lieu of, or in addition to, or instead of? Is that something that you would be willing to discuss as we go forward here? But there's obviously going to be a cost burden associated with this. I mean, as much as we'd like to say we're giving these things away, I don't see us giving them away. There's going to be a cost passed on to the consumer. So what's going to be the most cost-efficient way to do this? And I'm concerned about the our local pharmacies, again, our small ones in Greenbush and Roseau and War Road, and maybe even up in Shoreview. There might be a small one, I'm not sure. You know, how are they going to handle this stuff? What's going to be the plan for moving this forward to 2015, I think, is the date of enactment? A lot of statements there, some questions. Can you help me out, please?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, yes, I've been approached by the other manufacturer who feels disadvantaged by the legislation and would intend to continue conversations so that we have a bill that is not perceived to be and is not tilting the market in one direction. I think that the general approach I have with all my bills is to keep working with people right up until the moment of passage. So I would definitely continue to work with the folks on the other side. See if we can
Representative find Isaacson.
Peace.
Oh, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, just one.
Oh, go ahead, Representative Isaacson.
I get a little nervous when Representative Fabian and I seem to be on the same page, but I will say that I have to agree that what I'm concerned about here is I see a bigger picture that's not being answered, and that is how are we managing the waste of these things, and should we be the one, or does there need to be an industry solution that does that? But I guess the more I think about, the less inclined I am at this point to support what it is that we're trying to accomplish, because I don't believe if I thought that what you were providing was a solution to the problem with the needles, then I think I would be there, but I'm not so sure that we are if we don't have a plan to pick them up and we're not managing that. And so at this point, I'm a little befuddled moving forward on that, and I mean that with no disrespect, but I'm concerned that this is a much bigger issue we're trying to speak to, and I'm not so much, although I respect where he's coming from, concerned about the money and the focus. I'm more concerned about what are we going to do with these needles. And I don't feel like this solves that problem for me, and that's the problem I'd like to see solved.
Well, I didn't hear a question there. Representative Buglin.
Mr. Chair, if I could, though, respond. I think, Representative Isaacson, there is a more comprehensive solution, and I think Representative Gardner tried for many years to get a more comprehensive solution, and sometimes taking a half a step is better than not taking a step at all. I think that the testimony by the haulers with regard to the safety of the workers on the line was pretty compelling, and though we might not be completely solving the issue of what happens to these sharps once they're in the container, we are taking the step of protecting the people who process our recyclables.
Representative Uclum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Portman. We've seen pictures of people putting these things in Hilux bottles and everything else. And now with this box, it says that it can't go in recyclables, right? But it seems to me that people being people, in this case, they have a nice handy box that's been provided for them at no cost. Whether it goes in the garbage or could get tossed in the recyclables, there's no, in the bill right now, there is no method for this to be shipped back to a facility that can handle medical waste at this time, is there?
Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum, no, there's not, and that is exactly what the Gardner proposal was that was soundly defeated, and that there really would be a cost burden on manufacturers. Now, I, like Representative Isaacson, am comfortable with manufacturers being responsible for the cost at the end of the life of the product. But what these containers, though, you do raise an important question about the containers. Even if they were put in the recycling, it's my understanding that there are federal regs that govern how these things are put together, so they can't break open like the Hilux bottle. So we're still moving the ball forward in terms of protecting workers, even if people put them in the recycling, though they're not supposed to.
Here you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What about, for instance, the little snap-off one that's so small that holds 1,000 sharps? Would that be able to go in the recycling, or what would the scenario be for that type of disposal?
Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum, under the bill, if we were to adopt the bill, that wouldn't be okay in recycling, because I think that little clipper thing, if it broke open, you would have needles flying off the conveyor belt like you do now, so that we would not want in recycling. But we wouldn't want either of them, but I think that the container is, because it's federally mandated how it's put together, is less likely to break open than the little clipper.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I guess there's a lot of issues with this, and it's a very important bill. I think it needs a little more work.
Well, the chair makes his, renews it, or restates his motion to lay the bill over. Bill's laid over. Thank you. Next bill. okay, the next bill is Anzell's bill. The chair moves House File 2719, and there is an amendment, the A1 amendment. The chair also moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in its shape that it would like, the author would like it. In favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The bill is now, that motion carries. The bill is now in its shape that the author so desires. Representative Anzell's two-year bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, as you know, the northern Minnesota economy is largely dependent upon minerals and forestry, and this bill deals with our vast forest resource. Essentially, last year, the legislature enacted a provision to facilitate the permitting of a possible biofuel facility outside the Twin Cities metropolitan area. This legislation this year further clarifies that by including language that makes it clear that a biorefinery using woody biomass for application for plastics, transportation fuel, is also included in that original language from last year involving the permitting process. The Pollution Control Agency is reasonably okay with this language, this is of special concern to me and the people in my district. We have, as you know, a facility that makes paper in Grand Rapids, and this may have an application for the future of the Blandin Mill. So with that, I stand for questions.
House File 2719 as amended. Questions by the members? Anybody like to test it? Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like a little update on the facility itself. What's the biomass that they would be using? Would it be coming from Popple, or do you know? Or
Representative Anzell's.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it would come from the wood basket. The wood resource is available throughout northern Minnesota. It could be Popple, birch, black spruce, any of the species that we have available that's suitable for conversion into woody biomass.
Chief Johnson.
Yeah, thank you. A follow-up, would that also include red pine, or does, you know, the waste from the red pine that's off the, there's waste from the red pine when it's used for the paper mill. Do you know that, or?
Well, Anzell.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the red pine, or commonly known as the Norway pine, is used on a minimal basis to make paper at the mill. Frankly, I imagine it would be included in the wood basket for this application.
It would be. The red pine is mainly saw logs.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to get either PCA or EQB on the record on this. If they're
PCA? Kirk? Mr. Kadelka? Welcome, Mr. Kadelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Real quick, we are fine with the language as it's written. The language clarifies that this type of technology that's just extracting sugar from woody biomass is not a fuel facility in terms of when it may fall under environmental review categories. It is a much smaller process of the overall larger ethanol facilities. Now, if it does trigger other environmental review thresholds, that would still hold true, such as water discharge requirements that may trigger environmental review. But this just clarifies that it is not the same as a biofuels facility.
Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one final thing to the author. I think there were other bills moving around about providing subsidies for biofuels or bioengineering. Is this bill in any way related to those, or does this commit the state to any subsidy for this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, no connection with any appropriation of any kind.
Only if you could find $30 million for it, Representative Hansen. Any further questions for the author, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am curious and intrigued by this proposal because I think there's good potential for it. Do you have a sense of how close they are to pulling this off?
Representative Anzo.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I am not privy to the corporate decisions of this company or any other company. I just know that the Range delegation is always at the ready to create legislation which gives incentives to our job creators, which are in the forest industry and in mining.
And Representative Johnson, I think that Representative Anzell's mentioned a specific company, but this isn't a bill that benefits a specific company at this point because there isn't really a project before us.
Right.
That I am aware of, as he said, a Range delegation member. I don't know of a project yet, but we need to be, as he said, thinking out longer to find better value added. That's the key to this, the value add beyond that. Further questions by the member? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anzell, thank you. Good bill. I'm sure the loggers in northern Minnesota love it, so keep them coming.
And the people. And the people.
Representative Fabian, did you text anybody on that one? Any further? Anyone in the audience like to testify for or against? Okay, the chair will move that the bill, House File 2719, as amended, go to the general register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Representative Oguinius moved House File 2445 to be recommended to go to the general register. Be referred to the general register. Representative Oguinius, you have the DE1 amendment. And so Representative Oguinius moved the DE1 in favor of the DE1. Say aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails to the bill as amended. Representative Oguinius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is another opportunity for Minnesotans to use resources wisely by encouraging textile recycling or reusing. It sets a goal, not a mandate, a goal so we can focus. Right now, only 9.4% of textiles are recycled in Minnesota, but of course, they're all recyclable. So, with that, I just want to bring a couple of facts to you. Nationally, 2 million tons of used clothing, etc., are now recycling, but there are 11 million that aren't. And nationally, there's an estimate that about 40% of textiles are reused for their original purpose. In other words, a sweater is a sweater and is reused as a sweater. About 30% is cut into industrial wiping and polishing cloths. And another 25% is shredded. And I know about the shredding portion because this last fall my younger son was insulating his 1889 house and came home with this bundle of shredded blue jean and had to devise a way to get it in the walls of this old house, which he did. And if anybody wants to figure out how to do that, we do have a video of him doing it. But it was really cool to see this recycling project. So I very much encourage it. With me today is Carlo Cavallaro with USA Again, and he's going to tell you, give you a bigger perspective than I have just given you.
Mr. Cavallaro, welcome. Give your name for the record and your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Carlo Cavallaro. I'm the Director of Government Affairs and the in-house attorney for USA Again. USA Again is a national presence, for-profit textile clothes and shoes collector. We have our division office in Minnesota, our warehouse is actually in New Brighton. Our Minnesota division actually covers all of Minnesota, Iowa, and both Dakotas. Actually, we just bridged over the border to Nebraska as well. Our focus is the diversion of usable textile material, largely clothes and shoes, from landfills. We've been operating for about 15 years. Like as I said before, we're in about 19 states out of 11 division offices. We have 12,500 collection bins throughout all those divisions around the country. We place those bins in partnership with local property owners, and that relationship allows the public to voluntarily deposit their unwanted or used textile material, clothes and shoes, in those bins. We're 100% employee-based. So our employees manage and take care of those bins in that process. The key point, I was here before for the conversations, and a lot of it deals with extended producer responsibility. There's one key point that differentiates textiles from anything else, because, as Representative Wagenius had indicated, the vast majority of it is really just reused. So therefore, the textile material, it's not truly recycled, it is reuse. The challenges presented by other items you've seen or as a discussion before, they don't exist for textiles and shoes. There's an industry that's ages old. These wiper shredders, the recycled materials that's manufactured out of it, the thrift stores that we supply, they've been in existence for decades, and we stand ready to both make this goal successful. As the representative indicated, on a national basis, you know, the millions of pounds of clothes that are put into the waste stream, we collect back under the USCPA, we collect back only 15%. You're talking textiles is 5% of the entire municipal waste stream as an aggregate, and we collect back 15%. So that 85% is the material that this goal and this legislation is driven to raise awareness and foster the movement to get those materials diverted. We refer to this as a call of action to the general public, raises awareness and increases that diversion. The passage of the legislation will allow the industry to leverage your foresight and leadership to act and follow through with this call to action on all of our future public relations initiatives and marketing efforts. This legislation serves as a necessary catalyst in that regard. I know there's some concern that had come up previously with regards to reporting. We report what we collect to most of the cities we operate in and many of the counties. Specifically for Minnesota, we report voluntarily to 40 counties at this stage, at this point, the amount of material that we recover on an annual basis. With that, sorry, I cut my comments in the interest of time a little bit short, but I'm here for questions if anyone has any.
Question. Urizo, Representative Urizo.
Not a question, but a comment. You know, we have become removed from the textile manufacturer. It used to be something that everybody knew exactly what happened, and the bulk of textiles that we wear are either cotton or synthetic. You know, we use limited amounts of linen and wool and whatnot, and cotton is a crop that takes enormous amounts of water and pesticides and whatnot. So it's actually a rather environmentally unfriendly crop for the most part. And all of the synthetic materials we use come from petroleum feedstocks. So, and when we discard clothing, the fiber that makes it up still has an awful lot of useful life left in it. I have, my cousins are still using the rugs that were made by my grandmother from the rags, you know, after the clothing was passed down through however many of the six kids it made it through. They're on their fourth generation of use and still going strong. So it's a to bury it is really a waste of a lot of technology and feedstocks that went into it.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I think I heard you say that 9% is currently textiles are currently recycled
in Minnesota.
Yeah, how much? What's the percentage that's reused, or is that part of the 9%?
I think it's all okay. Inclusive. Am I correct about that?
Yes, it's a divert. There was 136,000. Mr. Chairman. The waste characterization study from 2013 showed 136,000 tons of textile waste. In the landfills out of 150,000 tons estimated is generated. So that's where your 9.4% is a differential.
Further question? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the author, Representative Wagenius, on line 1.6, it says textiles currently. What's your definition of currently?
Representative Wagenius.
Right now.
Further question? Ms. Garland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Carnival, again, representing the National Waste and Recycling Association. We have no objection to this bill. We think it's a good idea to get this material out of the waste stream and divert it from landfills and waste energy facilities. No complaints whatsoever. Problem is, when you include not only reuse but recycling, we see there's an infrastructure that exists right now with companies that are doing this, which is terrific. But if you include it in recycling and it ends up with traditional recycling, it could cause problems in terms of the machinery, as we spoke about earlier on the previous bill. It really isn't designed to handle this. My waste haul would tell me that the equipment might get clogged or tangled with some materials that were not intended to originally be recycled. So I just urge caution in how we project forward on how to deal with these materials. It seems like a separate waste stream is currently being used, and perhaps we need to work with the author to figure out whether this year or future years how to deal with materials rather than simply including it in the traditional recycling stream. So, be happy to take your questions. I have some folks here, again, who are in the recycling business, if you have specific questions.
Representative Ogenia?
I think what you are seeing here is now trying to practically deal with a problem we've got. And I kind of like the idea that we're practically dealing with a problem we've got. So if there are things we can do to make the language a little crisper, I'm glad to do it. I don't have that right here. But I think you know the intent is for reuse, and it may be maybe that we just talk about using the word reuse and not the word recycling, because all of this seems to be reuse to me, except for the shredding of the blue jeans to make insulation. I don't know whether that's called reuse or recycling, and maybe that is where we're running into a little bit of semantics.
Mr. Chair, the idea of taking recycling out would certainly be a step in the right direction, I think. And since Representative Wagenius indicates that the shredding issue might be kind of a secondary effort by folks who collect this for reuse, and to the extent it's not reusable, turn into the shredded materials. Recycling is probably not the right word for it, so in the traditional sense. So maybe that's the
thing. Mr. Eloff has some advice for us. I see the statute book out and open. Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair, it may or may not help. I just wanted to point out, I was looking at the definition of recycling in Chapter 115A, and it says, recycling means the process of collecting and preparing recyclable materials and reusing the materials in their original form or some other things. So it seems to me that the concept of reuse is already embodied in the statutory definition of recycling.
Thank you very much. Mr. Brick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I was looking, is what those numbers you pointed to of 9%, is that 92% or 91% of clothes are thrown in the actual garbage?
Oh, I'm going to ask my testifier.
Actually, Mr. Chair, no idea.
And we still have Ms. Garlis from the counties to testify.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you're asking the total amount of clothes that's landfilled?
Or burned.
The estimate comes from the US EPA, where they did, you take the waste characterization analysis of and the component that's in the waste stream itself, and they show that a recovery rate of 15%. And so when you do the total math on the 13 million tons of textile waste that's being diverted, and there's only 2 million tons, as the representative indicated, that's actually being tracked as recovered. A lot of what you'll see is, I mean, do we think those are, me personally, I don't know that I would swear that those are accurate, as it's 15%, it's low, but the idea is to start tracking and recording this.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but we just heard Mr. Eloff say that recycling is reuse. I got to be honest, I don't throw any of my old clothes in the garbage. I send them all to, I bet we get two calls a week from the Vietnam vets, from the Courage Center, and the Epilepsy Foundation, and a couple more, to put the bag out at the end of the driveway, and they take it away. I can't believe, and my neighbors all do it too, I can't believe that altogether we're throwing 91% of our clothes away and only 9% are going at the end of the driveway. And that doesn't count the ones that bring them to the Goodwill. Some people go that route too. Some of them sell them at a garage sale.
I'm going to be one, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Who
does the same thing that you do, but all the things that I take to the Salvation Army, which is where I happen to go, they can't sell. So that's what happens to some of the things that I think are going to be sold for reuse aren't.
Well, that was, I think you've led into my second question, Representative Wagenius. So currently the Goodwill and Salvation Army disposes to the landfill instead of to, I mean, the best rags I give to my son to use in his landscape business because they're good rags. And then don't they send stuff like the Salvation Army and they sell those for rags and stuff. They don't throw them in the landfill, do they?
I don't know the answer to that, Representative McNamara.
Thank you. Well, I think we might already be making your goal, if you ask me.
Ms. Garlis.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Annalie Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And for the sake of consolidating testimony, I'm also speaking on behalf of the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board and the Solid Waste Administrators Association. I'm here to share some questions and concerns that counties have about the bill. As you've heard in the last couple days, counties do a lot of work around the state to offer recycling opportunities to residents. We've invested heavily in infrastructure, funded programs, and added new waste streams to the list of items that we target for recycling or reuse. Because this bill sets a state goal, we are concerned that because counties have pre-existing infrastructure and programs and reporting procedures, the task will end up falling to local government. As we get closer to that date, there's a state goal, and counties will be turned to help meet the goal. We have a lot to account for in our solid waste plans and programs, and we're concerned about this becoming kind of an unspoken mandate that will fall down to the counties. As the previous testifier indicated, there are 40 counties that you're working with, and I heard from several of those counties, and they're working with the testifier's company to have some of the pounds or the tons that are collected within those counties reported. But I'm concerned that this could eventually fall to the counties to do increasingly more. And we've been talking about the funding a lot, and so we are hopeful for more funding in a different bill that we've been discussing. But without that, counties are doing a lot to recycle, and adding one more task kind of in an unspoken manner would be something that we're concerned about. We'd respectfully like to ask for some more time to discuss this with the Pollution Control Agency. Over the last year, they've been improving their reporting mechanisms to collect more data from commercial businesses about the types of reporting that are going on in mm-hmm. all the counties, and that's something that we are thankful for and we do want to hear more about. But we're curious how the Pollution Control Agency will get information from Goodwill and Salvation Army and some of the other places that have been mentioned to count what sorts of pounds are being reused and recycled in the state. And that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Questions for Ms. Garland? Representative Green, did you have a question to one of the testifiers of Representative Boyganius?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I think she just answered it. It had to do with where the clothes go from the Goodwill, and I think that she kind of alluded to that they do take them to the recycling center because that's where most of our everybody takes them in our area, and either the Goodwill or the secondhand store, and then whatever they don't sell, that would have been my question. So.
Right. Others to testify for or against the bill as amended in the audience. Anyone? Any further questions on the bill as amended by the committee? Being none, Representative Boyganius renews her motion to refer the bill to the general register as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Bill prevails. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Meeting adjourned.